You're on a live 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren.
I'm really delighted to have on the line Andrew Kelly, the CEO of the Antarctic Science Foundation. Andrew, good morning to you and thanks for joining us.
Morning, Jim. Morning, Darren. Thanks for the invite to be on.
Well, if I can just let our listeners know, about 3 years ago, I was in the Antarctic, an amazing place, went through and enjoyed with my wife an experience probably second to none. Tell our listeners, well, at the moment we'll talk about the Antarctic Science Foundation, but why is the Antarctic so important, Andrew?
Thanks, Jim. Antarctica is, as we know, the seventh and frozen icy planet, icy continent rather, but I actually call it our nearest planet, because if it were in front of us in the sky, we'd be revving ourselves up to go to it. But because it's just out of sight, we sometimes forget about it, but it's a very important part of our world. It's twice the size of Australia, and it becomes three times the size of Australia in winter when it's surrounded by sea ice. Australia has stewardship of 44% of Antarctica. But the real crucial element is that Antarctica for several million years has been returning and absorbing heat and carbon. And so we talk of it as being the shock absorber for the globe. And our understanding and care of Antarctica will have a very, very important part to play in sustainable life on this planet.
The reason for my delay in coming back with a quick response question, that is very, very insightful, the comments that you're making, because they've got really serious implications to the future generations of this world. That's what I'm hearing very loud and clear just in those very simple moments that you've just shared with us.
That's right. And our understanding of the importance of Antarctica, both today and for those future generations, is really the work of the many researchers that go down to Antarctica and look and examine this amazing archive, not only of history, but also of current phenomenon that are quite unique to any part of our world.
Andrew, it's Darren here.
Sorry, Darren.
Yeah, no, just thinking, in that introduction, you're saying that Antarctica is like our nearest planet, but is forgotten and people don't go there. Now, is it that easy to get to Antarctica? I've heard and read about different things of ships getting stuck, burning out engines and having to be rescued and those sorts of things. How do people actually, and the researchers, how do they travel to and from Antarctica and how long does it take?
Okay, so it's not easy to get there, and in fact it's easier most days of the week to get somebody off the International Space Station than it is to get them out of Antarctica.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so there's two ways to get down there. One by ship, and that has to be a polar class icebreaker to make it down to Antarctica most times of the year, and there's a very specific season for ship work, so it's from October to March. And outside of those times, it's impossible to get close. The other way is by plane, and there's an ice runway on the Australian territory that can be accessed by a small jet, and also the other territories, the Americans certainly have runways where they can land transports and the like. So they're the only two ways in and out, but there's a very compressed window. So we are preparing now for the 2021-2022 Antarctic research season, which runs from October to say March of any year.
That's really incredible. And just for our listeners to get an appreciation, some of the metrics or stats associated with Antarctica, you know, in terms of the coldness, I mean, you hear of, you know, figures of minus, you know, 50 degrees Celsius and things like that. I mean, that must be unbelievable. The daylight, I mean, just trying to imagine painting a picture in our mind of what that landscape looks like.
So the actual continent is largely covered in snow and ice, so there's a very, very small percentage of the continent that where you can see dirt or rock, around about just 3%. The rest of it is covered in ice, and at its coldest, recently we saw the coldest temperatures, which we get through the middle of winter, at around minus 80 degrees thereabouts, which is extremely cold. During the summer, the best you'll get on the coast in, say, East Antarctica is maybe 15 degrees above zero. But as you can see, it's a temperature range that tilts towards very, very cold. And that has enormous implications for the intrepid souls that go down there to do this work, because they're not doing it in air-conditioned labs. They are doing this work in the most extreme of conditions. So not only are we finding excellent discoveries about the climate, the biodiversity, the ecology of Antarctica, but we're learning a lot about what it means to be a human and work in extreme conditions. And indeed, NASA, for instance, are using the Antarctic environment as a proxy for training for human astronauts to go to other planets.
Really delighted to be speaking with Andrew Kelly, the CEO of Antarctic Science Foundation, an amazing organisation. Well, we're going to find out a lot about that after the break. Let's go to that break. You're on Spotlight with Jim and Darren, and it's just great to be speaking to you this morning.
On a live 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren.
Really delighted to have on the line Andrew Kelly, the CEO of the Antarctic Science Foundation, letting our listeners know what really happens down there and the great work that you're doing. Andrew, talk through and let us understand a little bit more about the Antarctic Science Foundation and what you're doing and the projects that you're encountering at the moment.
Thanks, Jim. The foundation was established to further the research that's needed to be done in Antarctica for the benefit of not only all of us here in Australia, but for those around the globe and really for humans and for people everywhere. And so the early work of the foundation focuses on those very basic elements of Antarctica. We were part funders in a voyage earlier this year, which did the first significant survey of krill in the Southern Ocean. Krill is a cornerstone species upon which almost every predator in the Southern Ocean relies, and it's vital for our fisheries, of which Australia has enormous resources at its disposal in the Southern Ocean and around our continent. So understanding what is happening to krill populations as the temperature of the globe warms, as seas warm, and the composition of our seas and oceans changes with increased carbon absorption. That was a really important project that we did earlier this year. We've also, in the process of looking at the 2021-22 Antarctic research season coming up, and the seasons that will follow. So as I mentioned before, it's hard to get in and out of Antarctica. So we plan very long term for the projects that we're doing because we have a very slight window each year to do them. And the really big project that's coming online this year is known as the Million Year Ice Core. And that'll see a group of expeditioners traverse across Antarctica and up a very, very high mountain, about 3,000 metres above sea level. And over the next four or five seasons, we'll be coring down into that ice mountain and taking out ice cores, which will give us the longest continuous record of climate and temperature changes on the Earth, dating back, we expect, at least a million years. That will give us a level of tractability in our data to help us understand what's happening to the globe and climate at the present, and also to put that in the context of what has happened over the last million years. So that's a very important project that we're involved in and looking forward to.
And Andrew, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about that particular project, the Million Year Ice Core. How many people would be involved in that? Where do they live? Do you set up base on that mountain? I mean, the skills required of the people, not around their own professional skills, but the agility and their physical skills must be of a level that surpasses the average human being.
Absolutely, Jim. So I suppose it's a little bit like a Formula One team. You see the driver in the car, but behind them is a factory or a pit lane full of people, and then a factory with hundreds of people. The Australian Antarctic Program, it consists of thousands of people, both in logistics and research. And so while the Million Year Ice Core will probably see about two dozen people traverse across the ice and set up camp for about 6 months while they establish this base, there'll be hundreds of people behind them assisting in the transport, the crawl of equipment up to that base, and then the retrieval of the ice cores back onto ships and kept at very cold temperatures before they're brought back to the mainland and Tasmania to be examined for the richer data that's included captured in that ice.
That I just find that, Darren, just such an amazing experience, and you've expressed it so well, Andrew. I mean, that sounds like a novel or a film for a book. It really does. The journey that you're going to undertake. How long is that period going to be, that particular project, that Million Year Ice Core?
That'll take about 5 years or five seasons, as I mentioned. So because we have that slight window, it'll take about 5 years for us to get down to the bottom of that mountain, which has captured that data and that particulate matter, those gases, because every time it snows in Antarctica, they're captured within that matter, and then the snow builds on the snow and has done so for about a million years.
Thank you. You've expressed that so beautifully. We're running out of time, but what other types of projects are you contemplating or currently working on to let our listeners know, please, Andrew?
Jim, I think the one that really resonates with many, many people is that we can talk about these big projects in Antarctica, and they're amazing. But one of the best initiatives we've been involved in over the last year was giving out some grants to PhD students who got caught up in during the COVID phase. Now, these are young people who have decided that they want to dedicate their life to Antarctica and research down there for the benefit of all of us. And when COVID hit, their casual jobs dried up. And being a PhD student is not the easiest task in the world. So the foundation got behind 15 young people who were doing their PhD studies and gave them some small grants. And I've spent the last few weeks speaking to each one of them and asking them how their experience went over the last year. And they were so grateful for these grants that our supporters provided to them just to get them through their work. And in doing so, we've really saved a generation of Antarctic PhD researchers. One of them said, you know, there's always money for projects, but there's not always money for people. And I'm really proud of the foundation that we're able to come to their aid during an unprecedented time for tertiary students.
Andrew, that is fantastic. And it's really good that you can support the young people as well as the more mature in their career researchers who are involved in the Antarctic Science Foundation and research in Antarctica. Now, I have a question, a bit out of notice, but knowing you very well, as I do, I understand that research costs a lot of money. Now, in your role in the Antarctic Science Foundation, do you participate in any fundraising, and how important is that part of research for Antarctica, and where does all that funding come from?
We do, Darren, we do. And really, none of this work could happen without the very generous and dedicated supporters of the Antarctic Science Foundation. And so I'm always talking to groups, to individuals, to companies about their desire to see a difference in the world, and usually they then decide to become supporters of the foundation, and we simply cannot do this work without that support. An interesting story: the other day, I wrote a thank you note to a gentleman who I thought a gentleman who made a first donation to the foundation. And I was really delighted to get a note back from his mum, telling me actually it was her 9-year-old son who had seen a David Attenborough documentary, and he decided that as part of his jobs and pocket money, he wanted to contribute to the Antarctic Science Foundation. So we have supporters at all levels, but all of them are joined in their desire to see a change in our world and to enable that change.
It really is fascinating, the work. We've run out of time, Andrew, and we'd love to have you come back and tell us more about the journey of what's happening in the Antarctic Science Foundation. On behalf of Spotlight, Darren and myself and 90 Point FM, we're just absolutely delighted you could share some time with us and the stories that you do, and we wish you all the very best in your endeavours. And also, I love the work with regards to the PhD students, because knowledge is what helps us build societies and communities. So thank you.
Jim, Darren, thank you so much. And to your listeners, thank you for your time. And I wish you all safety and health during this phase.
Thank you, Andrew, and have a great morning.